Man. Great, great, great song. You know, and I see those images of Martin Luther King and Mother Teresa, and sometimes they can be deflating because we think, wow, you know, if I could have a life like that, I can't even think about that. I can't even think about having any goals on a New Year's that might have something to do with something grand as that. Hey, let me tell you something. I don't think Martin Luther King ever had a goal and ever anticipated there'd be a national holiday after him, named after him. He never like saw this ultimate high place to get to and said, that's what I want to do. What he did was go one foot in front of the other, just did what he felt needed to be done. Mother Teresa never planned on being an inspiration to everybody across the entire globe, regardless of your belief system. She never said, how do I get to that place? Because there's no way you could do that. She knew where she was going. She filled her heart and she did what was next. And that's what our outline is today as we start this new series. Let's pray. God, I ask that you would help us today to make sense of this next year, get a little fuel in our tanks, and to most importantly, see you and sense you and have a deepening, ever-present relationship with you. And I pray that you'd help my words to cause this to happen. And I pray that my words would be in sync with your heart, with your truth. And I pray these things according to your character. Amen. Well, I'm wearing a Christmas present. It's not even mine, it's my son's. I stole my son's shirt. I'm wearing my son's Christmas. It's a little too hip for me. How many of us are wearing Christmas garb today? Anybody? Not many people. Man, Santa wasn't very good to us. It's like the tradition, got to wear my Christmas stuff whenever I can get out. And this message today is what I would call a mutt. It's a mutt. It's a combination of things. It's not a purebred, get ready for the new year, though it's in there. It's not a purebred, here's some things to do to help you to go next place in life. It's not a purebred, what's going to go on with Crossroads over the next year, though all those things are in there. I'm excited to make sense of where all of us can go to entire new places. And I've been thinking a lot about a guy named David who's the greatest king in the Old Testament in Israel's history, arguably the greatest king of any nation throughout all of times. And one of the things that we learn about kings in the Bible and see it over and over again is as the king goes, wherever the king goes, the people go. And I don't mean just because he's ordering people. I mean that there is something that happens where what happens in your life as a leader or a manager or a parent naturally gets reproduced in people who are around you. And all the time in the nation of Israel, wherever David ends up, the people end up. Or wherever any king ends up, the people end up. And this, sometimes this is very positive. Sometimes this is very negative. But it is a reality. And one of the reasons why David is called a man after God's own heart in the Bible is not because he didn't make mistakes. This is a guy who had adultery. This is a guy who actually murdered. But is that he did have an overall template of his life that worked. He did have a heart that wanted to turn towards God. And I'm going to talk today about how you make progress, how you go next. I could never give with integrity a message on how to set a 5-year course for your life. I could never do that. I could never have a message about how you make goals for several years in the future. I think there's a place for that. I think that's a good thing. But I couldn't speak to that and have integrity because that's never worked for me. In fact, if I had thought 5 years ago what my life would look right now, I would have never imagined it to look the way it did. Never, ever, ever. If when we had started Crossroads 13, 14 years ago, if we had set some 10-year strategic plan, we would have been about 400 people by now. We would have never, never anticipated to be across the globe helping and building into people ever. But what we've tried to do, and I want to encourage you to do, is three things. Know where you're going, know what fires up and fuels your heart, and simply to know what is next. Samuel is sort of the spiritual guru in Israel. He's the chief prophet. And he's going out to find a new king. And he goes to the house of Jesse. And he knows that one of these sons in Jesse's household is going to be the king. And so he sees this good-looking one, tall guy. He's like, he must be the one. And all of a sudden he senses God supernaturally saying to him, no, he's not the one. He sees another son that's good-looking, a little younger, but still kind of robust. And God says, no, 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 that's not the one. And here's what happens in the book of 2 Samuel 6:7. It says this. 1 Samuel 16:7 says, "But the Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things man looks at. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart.'" You ever notice for us as a country, and actually as a human race, we're fixated on the external. Go to even a news site that's supposed to be about meaty news and notice the percentage of the site that's taken up with gossip. Notice the percentage of the site that's taken up with what's happening with Tiger Woods, what's happening with Paris Hilton, what's happening with Charlie Sheen, what's happening with this, because we're fixated on what externally beautiful people are doing with their life. And we judge people on external appearances, where God says, "I judge you on what's going on inside. Look at the inner workings." And Samuel ends up seeing and anointing the next king of Israel as a boy, the youngest in the family, who in ancient cultures, the youngest is the least useful and the least valuable. He's doing the worst job. He's a shepherd. He's segregated off to the fields and meadows where nobodies are. And yet this little boy is the one who's going to be the greatest king, arguably, in human history. And David says, "Okay, you can anoint me." David just takes one step after another. He becomes king, or he is anointed, but he goes into a waiting period, and he goes to the battle lines of Israel as a boy, and he sees there's this giant Goliath who is taunting the army, saying, "Will nobody come out and fight me?" And he's going, "Is nobody going to go out? Well, no one's going to go out. It seems like a good idea. I'll go out." So he goes. He just takes the next step. And he realizes he has warrior abilities, leadership abilities. He steps into things as a leader. And it's said of him that he has killed or led into battle tens of thousands of people and eliminated enemies of Israel. And one step after another, he knows where he's going. Where is he going? He's going after God. He doesn't have this goal to be a great king that we're inspired by. He is a man after God's own heart, and he's going after God. That's where he's going. I subscribe to the Daily. It's a thing that comes to you by your email if you subscribe to it through crossroads.net. And it comes to you, how often does it come to you? Daily, yes, that's what I call daily. So creative, yes, so creative. Actually, 5 of 7 days it comes. And I was really struck by the one that came to my inbox on the last day of 2009. It said this: "What am I here for? What is my life about?" These are fitting questions to ask at this time of year. Regardless of what stage of life we're in, we all need and crave purpose. So it shouldn't surprise us that Jesus' last words were about this very thing, where Jesus said, Go into all the world. Do you know where you are going? Do you know what it is? What direction is it? And I'm not going to judge where that direction is. I'm just asking if you know where it is. What dream are you going after? What aspiration do you have? What guiding influence is there? For me, I'm going after God wherever that takes me, and whatever I see is the next thing that would honor God, that's where I'm going. And David follows that template. He gets towards the end of his life and he sees one thing after another, amazing things have happened, and then he realizes there's a problem that he doesn't like. And the problem is, he's got this tight crib, this homorama home. They were doing homorama back in Israel thousands of years ago. This homorama home, this fine cedar paneled house, and yet where he goes to worship God with all the other Israelites, they go to a temporary tent, the tabernacle, and he realizes, now what's wrong with this? I've got this sweet pad, I have the best of the best, and yet God has the worst of the worst. God has nothingness. When your heart's inclined towards God, you'll notice things that other people don't notice. You'll be bothered by things that other people aren't bothered by. And he's bothered that he's put more time into what's going into his personal life than what's going into God's worship life. And so he decides that, I need to bring God's house up to snuff. I need to go in and get this done, make it happen. And here's how it puts the story in 2 Samuel chapter 7, 1 to 3. After the king settled in his palace and the Lord had given him rest from all his enemies around him, he said to Nathan, who's now the new chief spiritual guru, Nathan the prophet, "Here I am living in a house of cedar while the ark of God remains in a tent." Nathan replied to the king, "Whatever you have in mind, you can do it, for the Lord is with you." Bella Caroli, "You can do it. Go ahead and do it, for the Lord is with you." Nathan says, "Hey, if it seems like it's a good thing, it seems right, go do it." Now, I find this fascinating because this entirely contradicts what I was taught when I started following Jesus. I had a group of people who built into me spiritually. I'm very thankful for them. There's a number of things I picked up that have served me to this day. But some of the things that I was taught and picked up really have been very harmful for me. One thing was, you know what? Just because it's a good idea doesn't mean it's a God idea. Yes, it does. It absolutely does. God is good. That's what I understand. God is good. So if it's a good idea, err on the side of doing it because God wants it. I believe that entirely. And the second thing is, I was taught this line, God loves you and has a wonderful plan for your life. That's seemingly not a bad statement. I mean, I like the idea that God loves me and wonderful things are wonderful. That's why they're called wonderful. But the way I heard that and the way I interpreted it is this. There is a specific template and a turn-by-turn will that God has for your life. In every single thing before you, there is a true, false, and you have to pass every single test. There is a specific college you are to go to or not go to a college. There is a specific career, a specific job, a specific house you're to buy, a specific this, a specific that. And this becomes drudgery. It becomes slavery because you live your life thinking, oh no, I hope I'm getting this one right. And then you realize if I get one of these options wrong, then what do I do? It's like taking the yolk out of an omelet. How do you do that? Because if I pick the wrong college to go to and I find the wrong person to marry and then therefore it gets me the wrong contacts, getting the wrong job, I'll never be in God's will. And so I just had this burden thing on me. And we see none of that in the Bible and none of that in the story. The most spiritual person in all of Israel, Nathan, the high prophet, says, hey, seems like a good idea. If that's in your heart, get on it, go. That simple. Not praying about it, not just go, do what's next. Now, every once in a while, it's very rare, every once in a while, God will intervene. And it's, by the way, never a bad idea to ask God. Never a bad idea to do that. I just don't think it's helpful to ask him about wearing green or red socks. I don't think he gives a rip on that. It's never wrong to ask God about things, but very rarely will God intercede and give a specific direction. He gives us freedom. But this is a situation where God specifically intercedes and says, no, I have a specific desire on this one. And he gives Nathan a vision, unexpected, where he comes to Nathan and says, hey, tell David, I appreciate his heart. I appreciate his thinking on this thing. But I never asked to have a great, perfect house for worship to happen in. I'm fine where I am. And when that happens someday, David's not supposed to be the guy to do that. It's going to be somebody else. It's going to be a son. He's to be a warrior. So call off the dogs on this. And so Nathan goes to David and says, hey, I told you it was a good idea. Go ahead and do it. But this is one of those times. Now, I'm sorry. This is not what you are to do. Now, I find fascinating about this is that David has this discipline built into his life where he can know and do the right thing. He's got a discipline built in his life of a close friendship of somebody he asks questions of. He opens up his life. The second thing that has to happen if you want to go places is realize what keeps us fresh and fired up. What is it that keeps us fresh and fired up? David knew that he needed a friend that he could open up his life to and share and ask whether or not this was a good idea or not. A couple months ago or so, I made a decision to buy another motorcycle, a different kind of motorcycle. I was going to buy a used one. And I asked a couple friends of mine, hey, what do you think? You think it's a good idea? You think it's a stupid purchase? What are you thinking about this? And because I want counsel. I need help navigating through life. So I remember going to one friend and said, hey, this is what I'm thinking of. This is how much this thing is going to cost. And here's how much money I have in savings. And so what do you think? Think it's a smart, all that kind of stuff. And he looked at me kind of strangely, and he just looked at me like a deer staring in the headlights, and he didn't have much to say. And a couple minutes later, I thought, man, maybe I bummed him out asking this. Is he judging me for this decision? Is he this or that? When you talk to people about money, if anybody has less than you, you have too much. But if anybody has more than you, you have not enough. That's kind of the way money works. So I called him up and say, hey, this is... what were you thinking there? I said, well, actually, I'm kind of convicted because you're asking for a relatively minor purchase in the grand scheme of things when I just made a much larger purchase and never asked anybody's opinion about that. And I'm just kind of bummed I never asked anybody. He said, give me about 24 hours and I'll think about it and pray about it. And if I have any promptings, I'll let you know. And he did, and it was a beautiful interaction. Those kind of interactions I have, not just because I want to make the right decision, but because it keeps my heart fresh and fired up. Reggie Leash. I'm curious, how many people know who Reggie Leash is? Not many people. Reggie Leash was one of the best hockey captains of all time from the Philadelphia Flyers. Thinking about him when I watched the Boston Bruins or saw the Boston Bruins and Philadelphia Flyers playing the Winter Classic in Fenway Park. Most of you don't give a rip about professional hockey. It's a bummer. Moving from Pittsburgh, where hockey was big, to a town where there's no professional hockey, it's just not that big of a deal. But as I saw the Philadelphia Flyers, I was reminded of Reggie Leach, one of their great captains in the 70s, I think it was, who said this: success is not the result of spontaneous combustion. You must set yourself on fire. It's true. I mean, so many people think, man, God just set me on fire. God, just give me some jolt, or God, just do this. We think that you're supposed to just walk around life and all of a sudden, oh, I feel God. Oh, now I can do great things. Oh, I'm ready. No, your heart is your responsibility. You have to know what will set you on fire and set yourself on fire. I was reminded of this when I was in India and a couple months ago, and went to Mother Teresa's room and took a picture of it. I should not have, but I did anyway. And took a picture of her room, and here's her wardrobe, and this is where she went at the end of every day and at the beginning of every day to get her clothes. And there's an old Catholic saint that inspired her, and Mother Teresa wrote in big letters underneath it, "My vocation is love." And I realized Mother Teresa was strategically placing something in a place that would fire her up, that would fill her up. Do you know what will fire you up and fill you up to go to the next place? David did. He knew it was friends. He also knew it was poetry. He was a Renaissance man. He's a warrior and he's a poet. He would play his instrument. He would just pour out his heart in his prayer journal. And this is where we get the book of Psalms. He did this, I don't think, because he thought that these were going to be inspiration for everybody to learn from, but because in the moment, he knew his heart needed it. He needed to tend to his heart. He needed to fire up his heart and freshen himself. As he hears from God this idea that he should not be doing this temple. Look what is said to him. Verse 11. "The Lord declares to you that the Lord himself will establish a house for you. And when your days are over and you rest with your ancestors, I will raise up your offspring to succeed you, who will come from your own body, and I will establish his kingdom." And here it kicks into some prophecy, where he's not just talking about his next generation, but the prophecy of Jesus' great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandson named Jesus, David's great-great-grandson named Jesus, talking about his kingdom. "He is the one who will build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. I will be his father, and he will be my son. And when he does wrong, I will punish him with a rod wielded by human beings, with floggings inflicted by human hands. But my love will never be taken away from him." Prophecy here of how his ultimate son, the son of God, Jesus, is going to be killed, satisfying my personal justice. Now, Jesus never does any wrongs, but I've done wrongs, and he's beat and flogged as a justice system, so I don't have to be. I remember interacting with an older African-American pastor here in Cincinnati a couple years ago, and he said something I'll never forget. He said, Martin died for my rights, but Jesus died for my wrongs. And that's the first of the year. Martin died for my rights, but Jesus died for my wrongs. God says, I'm going to satisfy justice and show you how much I love you, because I myself am going to take the burden of all of the wrongdoing. And David is living in this awareness that he's playing because he's keeping himself fresh and fired up. He's seeing things that he wouldn't normally see because he's taking responsibility for his spiritual formation for his life. And he's getting counsel and he's praying and he's interacting. Four things to think about this year. There's a bunch more, but there's four of them. Intellectual, physical, emotional, biblical. Four things all end with Al. There's other words that end with Al. Four of them: intellectual, physical, emotional, biblical. Do you know where you're going in these areas and how you're going to be building yourself up? I could have put spiritual up there because we talk about our spiritual life, but really your spiritual life is called your life. There is no separate category of your life. It's called spiritual life. God's blessed you with your brain. Develop it. He's blessed you with your body. Take care of it. He's blessed you with your emotions. Make sure they're feeling what should be felt. He's blessed you with the ability to know his transcendent character in the Bible. Come to understand these things. This year, do you have identifiable ways that you are going to fire yourself up in these areas? Our brains are gifts from God, and as we age, the synaptic connections shut down. The neural connections go awry. And one of the ways you can decrease the likelihood that you will lose your mind, literally, is to build the muscle of your mind. Do you have any plans to build your brain? God has given you a brain. He wants you to use it. Do you have any reading plan, any reading goals, doing Sudoku, anything that is going to help your brain? It must be fired up for you to go new places. Physically, do you have any thoughts of what you're going to do to make sure that you can go places that you couldn't go because you're physically able to take a walk or a hike? And I find that, you know, I'm physically doing okay. It helps my brain. It helps my emotions. It helps everything. It is all interconnected. Emotional. Man, I used to put down emotions, think, emotions are for girls. Who cares about emotions? You know, emotions. That's another thing I taught. You know, feelings aren't facts. And, you know, don't worry about your feelings. Just worry about faith. And that's crap. That's ridiculous. God has given me feelings. I want to feel. Now, I know my feelings aren't always true, but I want to feel. I want my eyes to well up when God is grieving. I want to be angry when God is angry. And I don't want to be angry when I should be grieving, and I don't want to be grieving when I should be angry. I want them to be in line. What is it that keeps your emotions flourishing and vibrant? One of the things for me is a motorcycle. There's something about that when I'm on. It regrounds me emotionally. What is it that helps you emotionally? Biblical. I have a goal this year. I'm going to be reading through the Bible, the whole Bible this year. I did that a couple years ago. Didn't do it last year. I read the Bible, but not as a regimented reading plan. I'm doing that this year. If you want to know God, even if you don't believe the Bible, you must read it at some point. Do you know what to read? What's your idea? If you don't know what to read, you don't know where to start. Easy thing to start is the daily. It will come to you. Daily, yes, amazing how that works. Daily, it will come to you daily, give you a little Bible verse and give you some things to think about. These are the things that anybody who is going places thinks through and processes. David comes to realize, my goodness, God, you are so good to do what you've done inside of me. I don't deserve what you've done in me. This is amazing. What's next? What's next? And so what he does next is he sets the temple up for success. Even though he doesn't build the temple, he acquires the natural resources. He goes out and recruits the artisans who are actually living in foreign countries. He gives the lead gift to kickstart the whole thing. He gives the leadership structure of the priesthood, their marching orders. He gets gatekeepers. He makes it so his son Solomon has a layup when he gets in office because he says, I'm making aggressive moves and I'm just going next. Now, why is this so important to me right now? This is so important to me right now because this is how I've seen God work in my life and everybody's life I admire. This is the way it happens. There are things that God does that exceed your planning, exceed your expectations because you're going the way of God, if that's where you're going. You're developing your heart and you're just simply knocking down barriers and going what's next. And it's what I've been wrestling with for months now, for months. And so I've been crossing bridges for the last several months, because just as David got to a place where he was at a crossroads, I felt and feel right now, actually the crossroads is at a crossroads. And I've been processing this for months and working it out with a number of our leaders around here. And what I want to do right now is I want to go back and bring you across some of the bridges I've gone over. I want to kind of come back to where I've been over here and just kind of walk us across some bridges of some realities that we are seeing around here about our influence and about stewarding the things that God has blessed us with and taking advantage of what is next. So some individual points of interest I've looked at and said, there's something about that right there. One of them is what's been happening in what's now being called the Great Recession. Not great if you're being hurt by it, but nonetheless great in terms of its magnitude. And I think it's interesting what's been happening with recession is that part of the positive things are that I think it's giving us all a bit more empathy for people who are in a place of need. You know, when unemployment is at 3-4%, and you see somebody who's out of work or somebody who's hurting, it's much easier to go, well, get a job. It's that simple, get a job, or judge somebody for mismanagement of money. But then when it's a 10% and you are one of those people or a friend of yours who you know has been very responsible and is very smart is hurting, all of a sudden you start to realize, well, maybe sometimes people just need some help from outside and we can't fully manage everything in life and ourselves. This is the CityLink vision. CityLink vision is to have one place where numerous agencies who have a track record with helping people who need help in one place where there's accountability, there's help, there's relationships, there's hand-holding through different things, and there's a relationship with the volunteers that transcends outside that building to their normal day-to-day life. We've been working on this for years with other organizations, and this is the year we're going to take a major, major step forward on this. We have building plans, we have permits, it's finalized, we're ready to go forward, and this is actually what the rendering looks like of what the CityLink Center is going to look like in the West Side. You can clap at any moment here. Now, actually, when we cost this out, I'm very confident those slanted glasses are going to go straight up and down as soon as this is costed out. But nonetheless, this is a reality that's going forward. And I've been wondering, how is this going to happen? What's the next big chunk that takes place with this? You know, there's three things that affect all of us for who we are. Our DNA, our environment, and our efforts. Those three things. Our DNA. My DNA causes me to be positively disposed to some things or negatively to others. My DNA causes me to have some aptitudes that you might not have or some aptitudes I'd like to have that you have. My DNA, just who I am, has caused me to make a decision that I'm never playing basketball again. Because my lower vertebrae, the discs, are virtually gone. My DNA just says, that's the way it is. Keep doing your core stuff. I need to keep doing that. But nonetheless, pounding on hard surfaces is not good for me. It doesn't matter how much I effort my way out of it. My DNA just puts a limitation on that. All of us have DNA that causes us to be able to make more neural connections, maybe have a possibility to have a higher IQ or a lower IQ. Then there's environments. You know, the households that we were born into, the countries that we were born into, the influences of teachers. We never planned any of these things, but they've made us who we are. It doesn't matter if your DNA tells you you have Albert Einstein abilities. If you're born to a girl who's been raped in India, you have no chance of ever getting ahead college-wise. It's just not going to happen. Well, can't God do anything? Yes, of course God can do anything. But likelihood, you are never going to school. You're never going to have natural opportunities. I personally was born in the Lucky Sperm Club. I just was. Born Lucky Sperm Club, have good abilities, was adopted into a family that gave me opportunities nobody else did. I never worked for any of those things. I can affect my efforts. My efforts, I can choose to affect my disciplines, my habits, my mindsets, but that is only one of the three factors. And the CityLink vision is all about those who, for whatever reason, are in a difficult place, going to a new place. And what some of us, if we've grown numb to that, it's because we've grown prideful, and you think that you've done it, and you haven't done it. You may have been responsible with your efforts, but you haven't done it. You're not self-made. Come on. You are not self-made. You didn't make your genes. You didn't make your environment. You were placed in a place. And what do we do as a community, having been placed in a certain place? And in this place, this very room, we had a volunteer celebration several months ago. It was a great, great time. Anytime volunteers get together and celebrate and actually drink beer and wine in a place where they sing songs, that's a wonderful thing. And we came together that night, and we took a look at a video that has continued to stick in my mind, and I've been having it marinate in my mind. And here's what that video was.
Last year, 08, for 10 years before that, I hated God. I yelled at God, I screamed at God, I cussed at God. Everything happened in my life that was bad was because of God. It was his fault, not mine. It was never my fault. It was his fault. And then I moved to Fort Thomas. Had a neighbor a couple years ago start talking to me about coming to this church. And I'm like, I don't do church. I know what I'm doing. My life is great. Had all kinds of great things going for me. So I thought. And finally, Super Bowl Sunday this year. Woke up that week and said, I'm going to go. And my neighbor goes, ooh, okay, good luck. It's a crazy week. So I pull up to this college-looking place, and I, with my family, my two kids and my wife, and walk in, and see a college atmosphere. So I figured, great, cool, this will be easy. This is a joke. I can walk around, smile, shake hands, go home. And then I sat down. And then the parade started, and the football field, and Jesus walked out. Crazy service. And I laughed, and I laughed. And then I don't remember the gentleman's name who did the sermon, so to speak, talked about almost losing his son. And I cried a lot. And then I laughed again. And I cried some more. And then I laughed. And then I laughed. We went home. And I cried some more. I laughed some more. All week long, I could think about getting back in here. Came back in. Same freaking thing. Laughed and cried. Walked in a kids' club, and my gosh, they were awesome. They were open arms. You know, my daughter and my son were so clingy and crying. And so I buried them off me, gave them to the little girl at kids' club, and I got behind the window that they can't see me. I can see them. And I watched them scream, and then I watched the kids come over to them. Then I watched the kids' club volunteers come over, and they calmed them down and relaxed. And before you know it, they're playing Play-Doh and balloons, and it was cool. It was cool. I just didn't think my kids could be happy without me. And all of a sudden, my son came home with a Bible, and he wanted to read it, and now he knows God. That's another story. Thank you for being a volunteer. Without you, I would not be here. I would not have been saved. I would have walked in here and had to give my kids to somebody who was rude and nasty and not nice, and I would have left, and I would still be in my personal hell. Instead, I am happy, and I'm in God's glory, and I'm extremely excited. Thank you.
Oh, come on! Come on! I watched that, and I just said, God, no matter what happens, just never have my heart go callous to that. Never, never do I want to emotionally become detached from when you touch a life. That will always be the greatest thing that ever happens around me or around Crossroads. It will not be the tutoring, though that's great. It will not be the AIDS hospice, though that's phenomenal. It will not be stuff in India, though that's heart-wrenching. It will always be when normal, average, everyday Cincinnatians go the way of God and everything starts changing your life. That will always be the way it is. And that's why our multi-site passions of having different pockets of the Crossroads community, different communities all over the region. In Mason, next one's going to be in Anderson and all other places. As we go forward, the next obvious place is so riveting to me of what that means in people's lives. And so I'm stewing on this and processing this. And then I find myself in India, which I never really wanted to go to India. People always said, hey, you got to go to India. No, I'm not going to India. I don't go to I have no desire to go there. All kinds of great things happen around Crossroads. I don't need to go there and be there in it. I support it. I cheerlead it. All of us have different things we do. There's no need for me to go to India. And then Gary Haugen, who is the founder of International Justice Mission, who will one day, no question about it, be a Nobel Peace Prize winner. He said, hey, I'm going to go to India to check out the operations over there. You want to go with me? I said, okay, I'll go with you. Yeah, that sounds good. So I decided to go with him, and there was another guy that he took as well, and our spouses went over, and it was a very interesting and intense trip. The biggest surprise to me came in Kolkata, which ended up being the greatest 5 hours of my life, because I went and saw where Mother Teresa was and was touched profoundly there. I saw the IJM office there and also experienced the aftercare home, one of them in Calcutta. What happens with IJM is they go into these countries where the laws are on the books saying these kind of things can't happen. Girls can't be sold into sex slavery, but the legal force is overwhelmed or they become numb to it or the legal system just has other fish that they're trying to fry. And so what IJM does is they send their investigators in, undercover folks, amass all of the evidence and serve it on a plate to the police and say, here all it is. It's going to be an easy layup for you. We're going to accompany with you on the raid. And then they will go and do the raid, but they'll only do the raid if there's a home to actually put the girls in that's approved by the Indian government. So we went to see one of these homes and, man, ripped my heart out. Put these girls in a cage to start with. It's a cage. There's a concrete floor and mesh around it for 6 months. Part of that is because they don't have the staff to build into those girls. Part of it's because those girls are going to try to escape and they need to contain them. Part of them is because the pimps are trying to break in and steal their money-making opportunities back, which after I left this specific home a couple weeks later, that's exactly what happened. And part of it is these girls need to decompress because they go into the rest of the population, they're going to bring everybody down because they're so emotionally disturbed, as anybody would be. They need a bit to decompress. Then after that, they go into the general population where they get help and they get trained. And while I was in that general population, here's a photo of me being around the circle with some of those girls. Strict policy is to blur the girls out to give them some sort of dignity. The woman in the middle is a staff member that helps girls. And the one in the middle there, the girl that, in the red, this is the girl I talked about a couple months ago, who she, I thought, was deformed because she was always hunched. But when I saw her straight on, I realized as she was hunched and her eyes wide open, she was taking the posture of a beat puppy where she was trying to make herself small so she wasn't noticed, opening her eyes in case somebody was going to hit her. And as I look at that, I still think about it. No, it wrecks me. It still wrecks me. And I'm glad it wrecks me, by the way, because there was a day in my life where nothing would wreck me, nothing at all. And one of the biggest fears I do have some, one of them is I just go numb. If I go numb, I don't get touched the way I want to by when God's touched. And this thing just continues to just devastate me when I think about her and I look in her eyes. So I'm in the car coming home from that, processing that, going, what is going on here? And finding out that there's dozens of girls that are giving blowjobs right now that don't have to be because they could be rescued, but the Indian government won't rescue them. They give out 100 to 250 sex acts a month forced. And these girls could be rescued right now, but they can't be rescued because there's no place to put them, and the Indian government won't perform the rescue until that. I'm going, oh gosh, are you kidding me? And so I'm just processing through, you know, my heart. I'm going the direction of God. My heart is feeling full. I'm saying this is next. And I said, well, how many homes do you need? What would alleviate the bottleneck? And I'm in the car with Gary Haugen, another staff member. And they said, probably six would do it. I said, how much would that cost? They ran some numbers and had some other interactions. And I asked God for a sign. I never ask God for signs. I've asked for God for a sign. I could count it on one hand in my entire life when I've asked for a sign. I just don't believe in signs. I normally believe that's a weenie way out. You see it? Freaking do it. It's that simple. Would Jesus do it? Then you go do it. You don't need to ask for a sign. Come on. So I've asked for about five times. And of those five times, I could count on one finger the number of times it's happened. And it was this time. I asked God for a specific thing. If you will do X, I will, and Crossroads will throw our weight behind making this happen and other things. And the exact thing took place, exact one. And so what does that mean? What does that mean? It means that we find ourselves in a place where we know we have a calling here in this city. And we know there's normal people that need to have a life redirection. There's something special God is doing. And in doing that with different sites, we have a wider base of more people to do things like tutoring, to bite off bigger things with CityLink, to get after other opportunities in South Africa, India. And so what that means is next fall, we're going to do a campaign. You don't have to clap for that, but I'm getting very excited about it. This is just taking you across bridges. These are the kind of things God is asking us to do, asking me to do, and I'm going that way. While I was coming back from India, we had a layover in London, and I said, ooh, London, never been there before. We have a 4-hour layover, flight's already paid for. Let's just make that a 48-hour layover, whatever it is. So we extended it and cruised around London a bit, and I had forgotten that London is the home of arguably the great, most respected nonprofit in the world, the Salvation Army. William Booth founded the Salvation Army out of the poverty that he saw in London. And William Booth was never anticipated the Salvation Army to be what it is. Never, ever. He just did what was next. He kept his heart fueled, his intellect fired up, himself physically capable, and just did the next thing. And here's what William Booth said. He said this, I have no idea what God will do with this ministry. I just know that God will have all of me. And I say the same thing. I have no idea what God is going to do at Crossroads come December of next year. I have no idea where we'll be 5 years from now. I have no idea we'd be here where we are 14 years from now. If we had a 20-year goal when we started Crossroads, it'd probably be about 500 people. We never anticipated the things that are happening. I just say in humility, this is why I love that I serve a big God. I'm going after God. I can't plan things that he's going to do. I don't know what's going to happen, but I know this, God, and I declare it right now, you have all of me, all of me. You have all of me. And he's had all of me. So this year, just set for yourself, where are you going? What is it? What is it that you need to do to fuel and fire yourself on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis? And then what's next? Just do it. Step out and do it. God, where you lead, I'm going to follow, and many of us will as well. And we're just going to declare that to you right now, that what is next and where you're going, many of us choose to go.